From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Most of us have wondered at some point or another about how bands pick their names. Today's live band is called Real Estate. They're a terrific group with lots of fans, including many notable music critics. But of course, if you Google Real Estate, you're going to have to do a little digging to find them. A few years back on Soundcheck, I asked lead singer and songwriter Martin Courtney why they picked such a problematic name. Listen to Martin trying to dance around the answer before the real truth comes out.
It was really just an aesthetic choice. It really had nothing to do with what we thought it would show up when we Googled it, I guess. Mm-hmm. We really never thought of that. It was kind of like we chose the name because it really didn't bring anything to mind. It just kind of sounded interesting to us.
And weren't you pursuing a real estate career?
Yeah. It was actually, I was in a real estate school like after college getting my real estate license.
Well, Martin and the rest of Real Estate are once again joining us on Soundcheck, and they're debuting two new songs from their forthcoming album. Stay with us for that. But first,
from Russia with love, I fly to you.
The Winter Games kick off this Friday in Sochi, Russia. And while we'll be watching the bobsled competition with bated breath, just like everyone else in the world, here at Soundcheck, we're also curious about the music and pop culture of Russia. So this week, we'll be celebrating those things with a series we call From Russia with Soundcheck. Joining us today, the writer Gary Steingart. He's earned acclaim for novels like The Russian Debutante's Handbook, Absurdistan, and Super Sad True Love Story. But his latest book is a memoir about growing up in a Russian Jewish family, first in the Soviet Union and later in Queens, New York. The book is called Little Failure, and it brings Gary Steingart to the Soundcheck studio. Welcome.
Hey, great to be here.
So you've picked for us three songs kind of inspired by your life and which therefore, you know, sort of relate to the book in some way.
Yeah.
Your life pivots at age what, seven? Is that
age
when you...
Age seven is when we abandoned the former Soviet Union for the greener shores of... We left Lenin's Russia for Ronald Reagan's United States. So
through the offices, as you point out, of the previous president, President Carter.
President Carter arranged a wonderful deal called Grain for Jews, in which Russia had a bad grain harvest, as it often does, so gazillions of tons of grain were shipped in return for, you know, some 100,000 Jews, of whom I was one. So, you know, just think of me being traded for a couple 100 baguettes and a croissant.
And a player to be named later.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, you have a funny way of putting things. At one point early in the book, you refer to the Yalta conferences, FDR, Stalin, and Churchill basically doing a real estate deal.
Yeah, you know.
Was it literally a grain for Jews thing?
There were other things, too. Russia was lacking in high technology. One thing I remember growing up, the television sets often exploded. So, you know, the technology to build non-explosive TV sets was something Russia deeply, deeply needed to keep its populace at bay.
So your first 7 years are spent in the Soviet Union, which now in hindsight we look back and we think, oh, those poor people. But you growing up, I mean, if there was a Soviet middle class, it seems like your parents were in it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, statistically speaking, I think we went from being sort of upper middle class in the Soviet Union to being, well, lower class when we first got to America. You know, my grandmother was getting that good old government cheese and the food stamps and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my parents rose quickly through the ranks, but started out the way everyone starts out, with nothing.
So the first song in your playlist for us actually makes a curious kind of sense. ABBA's Money, Money, Money.
Yeah.
What was it about this song?
Well, there were very few bands. I mean, the Iron Curtain was a serious Iron Curtain. You couldn't get anything through. It was very hard to get things through, anything from the West. But somehow ABBA, which was in nearby Sweden, did make it through. And we had these bizarre sort of blue records of, I think it was actually Russian cover bands doing ABBA.
Really?
So you would hear things like Money, money, money must be funny in the rich man's world. And you know,
I want to point out Gary Steingart is the son of a would-be opera singer.
That's right. I quickly skipped a generation. The musical talent obviously skipped a generation. Yeah, but what a great song for somebody who's preparing to leave Soviet Russia for the United States with its sort of turbo capitalism. So I must leave. I'll have to go to Las Vegas or Monaco and win a fortune in a game. My life will never be the same.
This must have just seemed like it came from another planet.
Came from another planet, and obviously we didn't know, our English wasn't quite good enough to figure, you know, to crack open the nut of, you know, exactly what Las Vegas and Monaco represented. But, you know, it was perfect. I mean, I think every immigrant to America should get, you know, an MP3 recording of Money Money downloaded into their whatever it is.
All right. This is ABBA with their 1976 hit Money Money Money. Band ABBA singing in English, Money Money Money, and yet even to a young asthmatic Gary Stein, well actually you were Igor Steingart back then.
Igor Steingart.
The
yeah.
message was somehow universal.
We were poor and the kids around me were rich and the song we listened to was Money Money Money. I mean, who needs metaphors when you got that, you know?
Gary Steingart is with us on Soundcheck with a Pick 3 playlist relating to his new memoir called Little Failure. Explain where that title comes from.
My mom decided, after I went to Oberlin, which is a wonderful sort of Marxist-Leninist college in Ohio, where I majored in, I don't know, the Beatles or whatever. No, I majored in political science because she wanted me to go to law school. So I got back to New York and I said, look, you know, I'm not going to go to law school. All that money was wasted. I'm going to be a writer. And she came to visit me in an apartment I had on Lower East Side before it was gentrified with, you know, 100 square feet, sloping floors, and a water bug the size of, you know, a human being. And she looked around and she said, you are a failure, Chka, a little failure. And I thought, okay,
so here
we go.
It was a loving term.
A loving term meant to encourage me to rise to great heights.
Now, I mentioned before your dad was a would-be opera singer. He actually ended up being an engineer.
Yeah.
But your mom had musical
right.
talent
she
as well.
She worked as a pianist and as a piano teacher in the Soviet Union. So, so they were always playing the piano and singing. And I was sort of forced to learn the violin and the balalaika and the piano. But I have a tin ear. Look, I like ABBA. I mean, you know, there's no redemption here. I just, me and music.
Now, but wait a minute. Because when you move to the city and eventually start going to Stuyvesant High School... You fall in love with WLIR.
That's right, WLIR.
Which was my favorite radio station well.
Because you're from Queens, too. So
yeah, but of course that was always the issue. Yeah. Can you get the signal?
Can you get the signal?
Because they were out on Long Island. Right. Explain to folks who don't know what WLIR was, what they were.
Well, the WLIR played The Smiths, I think, 24-7.
Girlfriend in a coma, I know, it's serious.
Erasure, Oh L'Amour.
Oh L'Amour, broke my heart, now I'm aching for you.
You know, the Depeche Mode.
Reach out, touch faith.
It was, I went to the, you know, Stuyvesant was this, you know, holding pen for multinational nerds, and we all loved WLIR. Later it became WDRE.
You're wrong.
it was like the new wave of, you know, a lot of the Britpop bands, in addition to the ones you mentioned, The Cure and Tears for Fears and people like
it
that.
It was, you know, part rock, part synth, that kind of
exactly,
mix.
Yeah.
And the cooler, like, you know, the native-born kids from the Upper West Side, all the stoners listened more to, like, you know, more rock.
Right, WNEW-FM.
Kind of stuff. They were more sort of, you know, cultured in the ways of the non-synth pop bands. But I love that stuff, and I love it still.
And what did your parents think when you started coming up with your own musical tastes that they were not sort of directing?
Yeah, they were fine with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they, you know, once the floodgates were open and they realized I wasn't just going to stick around, you know, spend my nights listening to Rachmaninoff while reading Tolstoy, they just gave up and said, just do well in school and go with the flow.
Well, also, I mean, I think they probably wanted to see little Gary become an American.
Yeah. And I would always listen to these radio stations while my father was driving the car. Even before high school, my father would be driving me around, and I would sort of, I remember that talk about nerds, musical Chess. And that song, One Night in Bangkok by
Murray
Head. Yeah, yeah. And I was obsessed with that song, and I would play it at full volume. And I think my father, despite his classical training, sort of bobbed along, and I don't think he minded that much.
We have a series we do here from time to time on Soundcheck called That Was a Hit, and a recent episode was all about that song from Chess.
I wish I could hear it, because I was...
You can hear it. It's on the website.
It's on the web. Okay, I got it.
Soundcheck.org.
Okay, I'll find it, because obsession, I mean, just and the video to it, that bizarre video.
Yeah, yeah, and it was one of the most well-received editions of this series. Uh-huh. I mean, people were just like freaking out. Oh my God, I can't believe you're talking about Chess with Murray Head.
Wow, Murray Head is unbelievable. I hope he's still around. I'd love to meet him someday.
I think he is. Yeah. He, you know, sort of like a failed actor as well as a failed singer.
Terrific. Big failure is his memoir.
Gary Steingart is author of the new memoir, Little Failure, and his novels, Absurdistan, Super Sad, True Love Story, Russian Debutante's Handbook, sharing a Pick 3 playlist with us. May There Always Be Sunshine is next on your list. Yeah. What is this?
Well, this is a song that all Russian school children learn to sing. The lyrics are very simple. May there always be sunshine. May there always be blue skies. May there always be mama. May there always be me. You know, so for a four-point program of good stuff that kids love. Sunshine, which we never had in Leningrad because, you know, it was frozen 24/7. Blue skies, which we also didn't have for similar reasons. But we did have mama, you know, and we loved our mamas. It was all families were about three people. There were never more than one kid in these families. So we were very tight-knit families. So the mama. And may there always be me is a really interesting kind of existential lyric. And this song was sung by the Young Pioneers, which was a group, a sort of proto-communist group that I was dying to get into when I was a kid, because you got to wear this red scarf around your neck and sing songs like, you know, May There Always Be Sunshine. And then, if I'm not mistaken, I realized this in America, it became a kind of, it was taken up by the American left as well.
Really?
Yeah, and I think it was sung by, oh boy, somebody did sing it. We can look it up on the internet, but...
Okay, well, maybe we'll do that while we listen to a little bit of the song. Sure. I don't know who this is. It's some random choir of kids from Moscow. They still sing this song in Russia, apparently.
Yeah.
And its English title would be Let There Always Be Sunshine. Now, Gary, it's not fair that only the Russian speakers get to have all the fun. But while we were listening to that, Joel in the control room says both Arlo Guthrie and Pete Seeger
That's what I was
recorded
looking for.
This song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I had no idea. And so did Rafi.
And more importantly, Rafi.
You were too old for Rafi by the time you discovered him, probably.
If only I was alive for Rafi's. If only I was that young.
Well, this is what English-speaking kids get to sing along to.
May there always be sunshine. May there always be blue sky. May there always be mama. May there always be me. Que siempre haya sol. Que siempre haya cielo.
Rafi, in English?
Yeah, well, you know, I just said...
Un poco canción en español.
You know, it's cute, though. I mean, I just had a three-month-old kid, and I didn't think I would have to expose him to Rafi, but maybe I will because of the song, because it's so cute when he sings it.
What a strange locution that was. I just had a three-month-old kid, as if... You had a three-month-old without having had a two-month-old or a one-month-old.
Oh, yeah, I just had. He came out 3 months wise. He was 12 months in the womb.
Obviously, Russian was your first language.
Mm-hmm. Hence, I can't get the simple sentences right.
But you left the Soviet Union at seven. You spoke. Did the family spoke some variant of Yiddish as well?
Well... Sometimes, and a lot of people tell me that this is a common experience, is that when the parents don't want you to understand things, they'll switch to Yiddish. There wasn't that much. My grandmother spoke perfect Yiddish, of course, both my grandmothers. But my parents, my mother would say things like, when fighting, she'd say, "You're a gurnisht, a nothing," you know, not even to me, but just in general. Mm-hmm. So
coming here then, English is, in effect, your second and a half language.
Yeah.
How long did it take before you were... comfortable. I mean, you tell this hilarious story about writing a novel at age five in exchange for cheese from grandma. How long was it before you felt comfortable in English to where the ideas and the stories came out naturally in English?
It took forever. It took about 5 years, which is a long time. You know, kids
for a seven-year-old.
Kids usually at that age, they adapt pretty quickly to their new language. I was just living in a fully Russianized household. There was no television. There were almost no English books. We just lived, you know, it was lady with lapdog when you entered our family's apartment. It was, so it took me a while. And I remember writing book reports. Like I wrote a book report on the Colosseum, and it was just a couple of words. Colosseum, Rome, had roof, not anymore. So that was my, that was my English. But then, you know, I really started to catch on, and I started writing these little science fiction novels of about 100 pages each with titles like Something is Wrong and The Challenge and Bionic Friends and stuff like that. And that's how I made my first American kid friends, you know, these kids. All thought I was some kind of red commie, and then, you know.
Then you mastered the definite and indefinite articles. And
once those indefinite articles were under my belt, people really liked me.
Yeah. So you tell a funny story about after moving to the States. We mentioned your dad with the singing, your mom with the piano.
Yeah.
This story of like kind of your dad wants to get closer to his religious roots. And start going to synagogue.
Mm.
And at one point, they find out your dad can sing.
Yeah.
And suddenly the family is like on display. You got to do a little dog and pony show.
We did a whole dog and pony show. It was very cute. I mean, it was this very Orthodox synagogue on Main Street in Kew Gardens. And they were they gathered money they got us our first army cot so we can sleep on things. And they were all pitched in. And then they decided, here's this musical family. And the little boy kid is supposed to be a genius at naming the capitals of the world. So we had this whole thing where my mother played the piano in the synagogue basement. My father sang some Russian classics like Ochi Chorny, Dark Eyes.
Dark Eyes,
And then also the sort of very sentimental Yiddish song, Offen Pripetschik, which makes an appearance in Schindler's List. It's that sentimental, you know. And I love some of these lyrics are... learn, children, don't be afraid. Every beginning is hard, which was perfect for a family that just moved to a place like Kew Gardens from Leningrad. And then afterwards, I was quizzed on, I got four capitals right. I think Uganda, Uruguay, four. And then I had to name the capital of Chad, and I failed to do it. It's Nadja something, but I flubbed it, and to my eternal shame. But it was still good enough. The performance, they gave us $250, and my mother bought her first business suit with it, a Harve Bernard size 2 business suit, which she wore to her first interview to become a clerk typist. So it all worked out great.
Now, if you'd gotten the name of that Chad capital right, who knows what they would have given
you. Oh, my God, millions.
Often Pripichek. Pripichek doesn't sound like a Yiddish word. This is one of those Ukrainian or Russian or Belarusian things, isn't it?
It sounds like it, yeah. I don't know.
But it's an old Yiddish song. Yeah. Your dad sings it in one scene in the book. And here is a recording by Anna Catherine and Yakov Kazyansky.
Often Pripichek. Brennt der Feuer und ein Stub ist heiß und der Rebel lernt kleine Kinderle dem Alephabet und der Rebel lernt kleine Kinderle dem Alephabet seht je Kinderle Denk je tijre, avos er leren dan. Zog je nog amol, en tak nog amol, kom het telefoon.
Zog je... Yeah. Yiddish standard, often Pripichek. So does that Gary Steingart bring back memories of... Igor Steingart and
Soviet Union. I mean, this was sort of our introduction to Judaism. My father, and he didn't sing it in that sort of tender, cloying, schmaltzy tone. It was this very strong baritone. Oh, von Pripichek, brennt der Feuer, et cetera, et cetera.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
But he wouldn't have sung this around the house.
No. We knew that, Ochichor, the Dark Eyes, was his favorite song. He loved singing that, and he did that very well. But, know your audience. And
right.
If you're going to have some Orthodox Jews willing to part with $250 on.
Whereas back home in Leningrad, maybe you didn't want to parade that side of
you
the family
You didn't go
too
around
much.
Singing Ofen Pripichek. But my father was. He was very involved. He would march outside the synagogue in Leningrad shouting, "We are Jews," which was insane back in the day. But he was... very committed to Judaism in a way that his son never was, but that was the difference.
Well, the odd sort of pas de deux, or I don't know what the trio version of a pas de deux would be, of you and your parents, that really is the nut of this book, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. That's, partly the reason I chose three songs in different languages, Russian, English, and Yiddish, because there's a little bit of all of that in this weird trio that we formed.
Yeah. MC Solar's music makes an appearance as you begin to establish yourself and your various habits, shall we say.
Well, yeah. For some reason, the use of horse tranquilizer and MC Solar in Park Slope in 1995 was kind of a given. I don't know why that happened. There it was.
I somehow missed that part of the Park Slope experience. But
this is before children were allowed in, so this was a different kind of Park Slope. And the Beatles, actually, when there was... At Oberlin, students were allowed to teach classes. I don't know why, but... So my next-door neighbor was this nice hippie guy who taught a class on the Beatles, and we would just, drop acid and listen to Revolver and for credit.
Just like your professors probably did back in the first go-round of the Beatles.
That's the beauty of Oberlin. It's only the past.
Yeah. So what are you listening to these days?
Well, it's funny. I just learned how to drive this year. God help us all at age 41. So I'm listening to a lot of the on Sirius, the Backbeat station, old hip hop. So a lot of Ice Cube. I guess I am being nostalgic. And in writing this memoir, I had to go back to the stuff that we listened to when I was, growing up. A lot of Run DMC, Public Enemy, that kind of stuff.
I'm living low next to the bass.
Come on!
Turn up the radio. They're claiming I'm a criminal. But now I wonder how. Some people never know. The enemy could be different.
Gary Steingart has been with us on Soundcheck, sharing his Pick 3 playlist. He's the author of the new memoir called Little Failure. It is a really touching and hilarious book. And Gary, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much.
The minute they see me, fear me, I'm the epitome of public enemy. Used, abused, without clues, I refuse to blow a fuse. They even had it on the news.
Don't believe the hype. Don't believe the hype.
was the start of my last jam. So here it is again, another death jam. But since I gave you all a little something that I knew you lacked, they still consider me a new jack. All the critics you can hang on my hold the rope, but they hope to the Pope and pray it ain't dope. The follower of Farrakhan, don't tell me that you understand until you hear the man. The book up the new school rap game. Writers treat me like
a reminder, all this week you can hear our series From Russia with Soundcheck. Tomorrow, the Russian-born singer-songwriter Regina Spektor joins us to talk about one of her musical heroes. And before file sharing, there was Samizdat culture and its musical equivalent, Magnitizat. We'll hear about this underground network of literature, music, and more tomorrow on Soundcheck. A bit later in the show, we'll get a couple of Russian pop music picks from the editor-in-chief of Rolling Stone Russia. But first, we'll pause for the New Jersey natives of Real Estate. The guitar pop band is here to debut new songs from their upcoming album, Atlas. It's a Soundcheck exclusive. Next. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Over the past 5 years, the band Real Estate has been busy marking their sonic territory with an evocative brand of shimmering guitar pop. Their third album, called Atlas, isn't due out until March, but the band is bringing some of their sunny melodies to us a bit early. Real Estate joins us once again in the Soundcheck studio to play the lead single from the new album. The song's called Talking Backwards. It's Real Estate live on Soundcheck. band Real Estate live on Soundcheck with a single from their forthcoming record. The album will be called Atlas. The song is Talking Backwards. And let me introduce you to the members of Real Estate joining us for the third time in advance of their third album. Martin Courtney on vocals and guitar. Hey, Martin.
Hello.
Matt Mondanelli playing guitar, Alex Bleeker on bass, Jackson Paulus behind our drum kit, Matt Coleman playing the keyboards. Martin, the last two times you guys were on was right around the release date of the first two records. Now you're back in advance of the third album, and if memory serves, it looks like you guys have gotten bigger since the last time you were here.
Right, yeah, well, we've, I guess, expanded our lineup, yeah. Got a new
to accommodate a new sound or a depth of songwriting? What was the reason?
I think we've always had keys on the records, and it's just nice to have, you know, that extra depth when you play live. It just fills it out a little bit, and, you know, Matt adds some nice parts. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the texture of your records, you know, has always had, I mean, people use sort of comparisons to 1970s FM rock and the sounds of bands like, I don't know, Death Cab for Cutie and people like that, and, you know, all these jangly guitars and the shimmering keyboards and stuff. Has that, you know, stayed pretty consistent even as you head on through this third record?
Yeah, I mean, I think our sound is kind of something that we sort of found pretty early on, and
right.
We've kind of, it comes pretty naturally to us, so mm-hmm. I think, you know, we didn't kind of make any decisions to do anything drastically different this time.
Yeah, although people have remarked on the sunny nature of the first couple of records, and Atlas has a couple of tracks, especially as you get further into the record, where there might be a few clouds in the sky there.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like people say that about us, that our music is kind of sunny and summery, and, you know, both of our previous records came out in the fall. This record's coming out in the winter, or I guess early spring. Yeah, it's winter still. And yeah, I mean, I think our sound spans all seasons, you know? I mean, but I do think, yeah, there are some darker songs on this record, for sure.
The album's called Atlas, and it'll be released on March 4th. Now, Atlas as a title could either mean the guy who literally has the weight of the world on his shoulders, or it could also mean, you know, a kind of a map.
I think that's kind of more of the reference for us, and it's sort of, it refers more to like the actual physical, you know, object of like a book that you hold that kind of, you know, helps you get around kind mm-hmm. of deal. Yeah.
Well, now you guys, you came out of the suburbs of New Jersey, Ridgewood, but last time you were here, you'd all moved to New York. Do you still identify as a Jersey band?
Three of us grew up in New Jersey. You know, now we have members that are from Jackson's been in the band for a while. He's from New York, and Matt is from the Bay Area. So, mm-hmm. I mean, but yeah, I think.
And other Matt has just moved to L.A.
And the other Matt just moved to Los Angeles.
You need an atlas just to know where everybody is.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, we identify as hopefully kind of belonging to a lineage of bands that come, you know, hail from New Jersey originally.
Right. Now, the album Atlas was recorded in Chicago mm-hmm. at Wilco's studio.
Yes.
Now, is Wilco one of those kind of touchstone bands for you guys?
I definitely have been through some heavy Wilco phases for sure. And I think, it's mostly their records for us, I think, sound really, really great. You mm-hmm, know, they have really, really nice sounding records, and we were trying to, I think, step it up a little bit with this album and make, you know, a better sounding album.
You know, the funny thing with Wilco is they've been through so many different phases. You know, they haven't been like the same sounding band all the way through.
Right.
And in recent years, they've sort of been mining a lot of, it seems, the same territory that you guys have been.
They're a good band. So
when you guys got into the studio, was the idea that we're going to just go in as a band, sit down as a band, and kind of do this almost live to tape? Or, you know, was it the more conventional, I'll track my part, you track your part, we'll put the drums and the vocals in later, that sort of thing?
It was definitely more the former. Like, we spent a couple months before going into the studio, just rehearsing as a band and getting the songs arranged and getting all of our parts together. So when we went into the studio, we were pretty much ready to sit down and just play it, which is how we did it. Yeah.
Well, the results are on the new album called Atlas, which comes out on March 4th. And then Real Estate will be back out on the road. And when the tour ends in the spring, it'll end here in New York at Webster Hall on April 5th. It's the band Real Estate performing live on Soundcheck and a song called The Bend. That is the band Real Estate, live in the Soundcheck studio with a song called The Bend. That's new. It'll be on the next album by Real Estate, Atlas, their third, which comes out on March 4th, but we're getting a bit of a preview in these live performances on Soundcheck today. The band will be playing here in New York on Saturday, April 5th at Webster Hall. It's the final date of their spring tour. And each time the band has played here in the studio, they've done an instrumental track for us. And today will be no exception. Here is the instrumental track called April Song. Thank you. The band Real Estate, live on Soundcheck, with April's Song, an instrumental track, which will appear on Atlas, their new record. It'll be their third, out on March 4th. And then the band heads out on tour. They'll be back here in New York on Saturday, April 5th at Webster Hall, playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio, as they have done for each of their three albums. And every time, Martin, you guys have done an instrumental track for us.
That's right.
The rock instrumental, the pop instrumental, you know, it's sort of a dying art. I mean, it gets resurrected in unexpected ways every now and again, but...
Yeah, I mean, we just have had one on every record, yep, and we like to, you know, keep that going. It's kind of fun.
Now, are you a big fan of the surf guitar sound, Dick Dale, The Ventures, that sort of thing?
I mean, like, not to the, you know... point that I actually know that much about it, but but yeah, I mean, I think especially early on, it was like something that we thought sounded cool, and yeah, for sure, like, yeah.
Well, I mean, that piece, you know, that's just, I mean, some might say it's swimming in reverb. Yeah. I would say it's swimming in the sound of the 60s and the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, it makes its way, I think, definitely into some of my guitar playing, and, you know, just like using the whammy bar and things like that, for sure.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you about the artwork for the new album, because you've been teasing bits and pieces of this on your Instagram account.
Right.
And it turns out,
yeah,
it's all part of a mural, is that right?
Yeah, it's the cover of the record is most of a mural that used to hang on the side of a department store in Paramus, New Jersey, called Alexander's. It was there up until like the mid 90s. We used to drive past it every day, and it was just this huge, massive mural from the 60s that eventually got torn down.
Wow.
But yeah, the actual department store was defunct pretty much the entire time I was alive. So it was just this old building.
Oh, I remember Alexander.
Yeah.
I had a summer job at Alexander's. Yeah. Not the one in Paramus, the one in Manhattan.
Okay, yeah.
But that's going back a few years.
Right, so. It's been...
How did you get, if the building's long gone, the mural's long gone, how did you get it?
I kind of remembered it, and then we thought it was a cool idea to use maybe part of it for the album cover, and I kind of scoured Google Image to find a decent, you know, picture of it, and then we got in touch with the owner of the image, and, you know, like, we were able to make it work, yeah.
All right. Well, the artwork and the music within, all available on March 4th, the album called Atlas from the band Real Estate. They've been with us on Soundcheck. It's always great to have you guys with us, and congratulations on the new record.
Thank you. Thanks for having us back.
We stare at the shadows on the
If you liked our in-studio session with Real Estate, I just want to remind you that you can hear these performances first online. Almost every day, we stream a live broadcast from our studio at 2 p.m. on soundcheck.org. So take a little break from the job and listen to a great performance, maybe on headphones at your desk. Tomorrow at 2 p.m. on soundcheck.org, hear a session with the singer, songwriter, and survivor, Steve Earle. Here's a bit from his new album, The Low Highway, and the Grammy-nominated song called Invisible.
There's a hole in my shoe, I don't mind, 'cause it keeps me connected to the ground, and I'm feeling like maybe if I careful, I just blew away. Then lightning strikes, a thunder rolls, and I'm okay. Everywhere I go, people pass me by. They never know, 'cause I'm invisible.
That's Steve Earle and the song Invisible from his latest album, The Low Highway. You can hear Steve Earle performing in our studio tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on soundcheck.org. Coming up later this week, a live webcast with Benmont Tench, the pianist from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers and many others. And on Friday, hear a performance by the Malaysian singer Yuna, 2 p.m. each day at soundcheck.org. In a moment, we'll introduce you to three Russian bands that you'll want to keep on your radar. That's next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. On yesterday's show, we kicked off our week-long look at music and pop culture in Russia. We call it, for no clear reason, From Russia with Soundcheck. And we mentioned the band Mummy Troll. Today, I want to play a little bit of their music because people keep mentioning them when we talk about the big names in music in Russia right now. Like Sasha Kondukov, the editor-in-chief of Rolling Stone Russia. The other day, we Skyped in to him to ask about the biggest bands in Russia right now. And sure enough, Mummy Troll came up first on his list.
The first one is the Mummy Troll, and the second one, I think, it's a group called Leningrad. And their lead singer, Sergei Shnurov, it's like similar to Gogol Bordello.
Okay, so let's hear those bands. First, Mummy Troll, and a song called Swimming with Sharks.
Stars, get on my web. Our party has begun. I'll start your fire. I'm your 911. To ashes, lullaby. My foggy soul. Touch my cloudy hand.
And here's Leningrad, the other Russian band picked by Sasha Kondukov of Rolling Stone Russia.
Ловил я много разных рыбок. Я знаю клюв. Вывелся, где море дед. Вечер улыбок.
Okay, one more Russian artist that Sasha Kondukov recommended that I just got to play for you. Here's Sasha.
Zemfira is the role model for the girls with the broken hearts who like big sounds and stadium sounds. Zemfira played with Brian May of Queen, and they like Radiohead, and she like PJ Harvey of Russian
really?
Pop scene.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, but
not PJ Harvey of the moment, but PJ Harvey of mid 90s.
Я держу тебя за руку, и все расплывается. Успокой меня заново, мне уже.
Zemfira, the Russian pop star, and her song called Walk. Picked for us by Sasha Kondukov of Rolling Stone Russia. Tune in all this week as we explore pop music in Russia, past and present, in the lead-up to the Olympic Games in Sochi. Or follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook to get updates when we post our podcasts. Tomorrow on the show, born in Moscow, the New York-based indie pop star Regina Spektor schools us about a personal hero, the late Soviet-era singer Vladimir Vysotsky, and how an underground network helped spread literature and music in the Soviet Union. Also tomorrow, Hospitality, the Brooklyn-based indie band, has just released its second album called Trouble. Maybe we're asking for it, but we've invited them to play in our studio. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team with Paul Schneider, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Katie Bishop, Dan O'Donnell, Mike Katziff, with Amy Pearl. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.